Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and it's a crisp, cooler, fall-like day in Brooklyn. And I don't know about you, but I'm really looking forward to soup and sandwiches, lots of them. And fortunately, I have a cookbook right now that has lots of them. It's called Flower 2 by Joanne Chang. She is the chef owner of Flower Restaurants in Boston. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks. So this is really exciting. This is your second cookbook, hence the comma two.
Exactly.
Congrats. And you know, like a lot of restaurants these days, successful restaurants, will come out with a cookbook. But it's really something else. It's really saying that there's something seriously going on here when you have a restaurant that comes out with a sequel cookbook. And I mean, that's like a whole other level of a success, I think. So congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you very much. Well, the first book was entirely meant to be baking. And It's basically every single pastry that we have at the bakery from a sweet perspective. And when the book came out, immediately customers and readers who were baking from it said, you know, we really love these recipes, but we're looking also to see the savory side of flour. And so that's what led to the second cookbook. This is the savory side of the bakery, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and at parties as well.
Right. So this book is all about the savory. So it's like flour 2.0, savory rather than sweet. And you know, flour, the restaurants, now there's four of them, correct? Four different locations throughout Boston?
Correct.
And Cambridge?
Exactly.
Well, hey, maybe you'll have two more cookbooks coming up. And by then you'll have like two more restaurants you'll have to catch up. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So what was I going to say? but it sounds like, you know, reading your introduction, the flour, the bakery started out as more of a pastry oriented, you know, sweets oriented place before all the sort of sandwiches, soups, breakfasts, and more savory offerings, came out. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, yeah. When I started flour, I mean, we've always had savories. We've always had a cafe menu, but my training is in pastries and, you know, my original intent was to create a patisserie or a bakery without really thinking about the savory side. And for better or for worse, you know, I realized that at least in Boston, if I was going to create a bakery, the only way to really make it viable in a big way was to offer savories as well, because we don't really have the habit as they do in Europe, where you'll have a bakery that just bakes goods and people will frequent it all day long. So we created a cafe menu with sandwiches, soups, and salads, and pizzas, and quiche, and people come in all day long for that, and then at the same time when they're in for savories, then they'll order a cake for a birthday, or they'll get, you know, a muffin for breakfast or a cookie with their lunch. So it's worked out. It's win-win all the way around.
Smart, yeah. And they all looked really, really fabulous stuff. I love the salads. I love the like warm kind of like savory salads that you have throughout this book too. It's perfect for any like any meal, really. Lunch, dinner, breakfast.
Yeah. I love the salads that we do, definitely. They're really meant to be not just side salads, but sometimes they're big enough just to be actually a main salad. And I find myself that I eat a lot of salads as like my main meal.
So healthy. And Flower, the restaurants haven't been around for too long. Is that right? And, you know, this has all happened in a, how long ago was the first Flower opened?
I guess it depends on your perspective. I mean, it's been 13 years that we opened the first one. We just had one location in Boston for 6.5 years, and then in the last, you know, 6 years or so, we've opened 3 other locations. So it has been relatively recently that we've had multiple locations, but the original one opened September 2000.
I see. Okay, I guess I was around then, because I was going to say I went to school in Boston, but I wasn't around for when Flower first opened, but I guess I was just there and just leaving. So,
okay.
Yeah. When I went to school, I graduated in 2003. Boston wasn't much of a food city.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's developed a lot over the last decade or
yeah.
so. If you were there till 2003,
I left.
It was just starting. But now it's crazy. I feel like it's become such a great food town. Really, really developed over the years with incredible chefs. That, you know, we're all very collaborative, and everybody works really well together, and spends a lot of time visiting each other's restaurants, and you know, working at events together. I think it helps that Boston is physically
small. Yeah.
Yeah, so it helps to kind of create a community of chefs that we can all see each other and hang out together in a way that's probably a little bit different from some other cities.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable the transformation. You know, thanks to your restaurant and several others in just the last decade or so. It's just really taken off. I was traveling through Boston. A couple years ago, actually, when my book came out, and things had definitely changed, because I remember when I was going to school there, the only places I would really eat were the tiny little Chinatown holes in the wall.
Yeah, a hole in the wall.
But
now there's lots of places for you to choose from now.
Yeah, yeah, it's really exciting to be part of that. And do you have any aspirations to move outside of, to like open a different location in a different city entirely?
You know, I don't. One of my colleagues, Jamie Bissonette, he's actually moving your way. They're getting ready to open Toro in New York. And I have a couple of other chef friends who've been reaching out and looking at other cities. But for me personally, I really am kind of a Boston girl. I love being here. I love creating a, you know, restaurant community, working within the restaurant community here. We have a lot of former employees from Flower who actually live in Manhattan now. So I do feel like that if I ever got the inspiration, I could move to New York or at least open a Flower in New York and staff it with, you know, 2 or 3 dozen Flower alums. So that's never too far from the back of my mind.
Well, that's cool, though, keeping it real. And you also lived in Cambridge for college. You went to Harvard. This was before you had any aspirations of being a cook, however. Right?
Oh, I have, none. I mean, I made chocolate chip cookies and sold them to the dormitory grill. And I think I made, you know, $70 to $80 a semester doing that. So I had a mini itty bitty business, but nothing that really would indicate that I would end up in this industry.
And you studied.
I always loved to cook and eat. And so that was, you know, one indication that I might end up here.
That's pretty cool. And you studied economics and math. Pretty different territory from the kitchen.
Yeah, I've always been very into math. And then economics, my mom was an economist, so she kind of led me into that direction. And even though it seems like it's different territory, now I feel like it's kind of come around full circle in that, you know, running a business, there's a lot of economics in it. There's a lot of accounting. There's a lot of math. And so in some ways, I do feel like, you know, I was able to take some of my college experience and apply it to what I do every day now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, running a restaurant is not all just kind of being an artiste, if you will. And doing it well, at least, we could say. That's very interesting. I noticed in your introduction you mentioned that you grew up in a very food-centric Taiwanese-American family where you were thinking about lunch during breakfast and you were thinking about dinner during lunch and so forth. Can you tell me a little bit about that and why that's somehow particularly Taiwanese?
You know, I don't know if it is particularly Taiwanese. I do know that every single one of my friends who are Taiwanese and all of my parents' friends in the community that we grew up with that are Taiwanese, it is just how we think. And I know that there are many cultures out there that also think similarly, but it is not far from an obsession, you know, this thinking about food all the time. I mean, we are literally, when we're going on vacation, we think about, you know, where we're going to stay based on the restaurants that we want to visit. You know, when we're, and to say that when we're at lunch thinking about dinner, I mean, we are literally stuffing our faces at lunch planning dinner, you know, planning kind of everything we're going to put in our mouths between now and dinner time. And it's just a perpetual cycle.
Holidays.
My husband Christopher,
yeah,
he's always laughing because we'll all be eating dinner, thinking about the next day, thinking about breakfast. And he's like, "You guys ever stop thinking about food?" And my mom kind of looks at him puzzled and like, "No, why would you?
Why would you ask that?"
I
grew up in a half Taiwanese household, and
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
So I would say it's particular. It's, I mean, everyone I know who's Taiwanese is the same way. You know, every holiday revolves around food. It's an excuse, really, to eat.
Yeah.
that's what a holiday is. Going up.
And for me, growing up, you know, my parents, they weren't born in America. They are Buddhist by, you know, upbringing, and they didn't really take on any sort of Christian religion when they moved here to the States. And so, but living in America, you know, you learn about Christmas and Easter and, mm-hmm. and all of the holidays, really. And I had no inkling that these were not food holidays. I did not realize that Christmas had anything to do with Christianity. To me, it was a day off from school where you got to eat anything you wanted all day long because that's how we treated it at home. And the same with Easter. And then Thanksgiving is a food holiday for everybody.
But right.
Every single holiday was just an excuse. You know, if we didn't have to go to school, it's an excuse to go to the Chinese markets, buy lots and lots of food, you know, get lots of stuff to bring home and make a big feast. So holidays to me are always all about food.
Right. And did your family cook a lot of, like, I don't know, Easter ham, turkey, like the traditional American foods, or would they make a big kind of banquet style, family style feast of Chinese food, or both?
The latter. We never did the traditional American stuff.
Okay.
We never had turkey. We never had ham. But we would always have duck. My mom would either roast a duck herself, or depending on where we lived, if we were near a Chinese market that sold good roast duck, we would get a roast duck. But it was always an excuse to kind of pull out all the stuff. So all the different side dishes that she learned growing up, all the different vegetables and fried noodle dishes and, you know, whole fish. So it wasn't traditional American mm-hmm. food. It was just traditional Taiwanese food, but there was lots and lots of it. So in that respect, it was, I think, very American, where you have like a lot of
right,
food and you're
sides.
Celebrating. Yeah.
And so if I'm understanding this correctly, the roast duck was the turkey for Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what we did. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I noticed that you have a Mama Chang's hot and sour soup recipe in this book, and it looks delicious. I kind of want to swim in it. It's gorgeous photography, by the way, by our friend and fellow host here on Heritage, Michael Harlan Turkel.
Michael did an incredible job with these photos, and I'm so happy with how they came out. I just feel like you really feel like you're at the bakery, and you can see everything, all of the care and the love that goes into all of the dishes. I think he did such a great job capturing that. He was again bordering on obsessive, just kind of
right.
following everybody around and taking 20,000 pictures of the same thing. And but he had such a way about him where he would kind of stay in the background. So after a while, we all kind of got used to his being there, and everybody just kind of went about their business. And it really allowed him to capture everything that goes on at the bakery, you know, in a real way.
That's so cool. Sounds like it was a great matchup.
Yeah.
So the Mama Chang's hot and sour soup is something that you have on the menu at Flower, and is it actually your mom's recipe or something?
It is a
inspired?
Yeah, it's a variation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simplified variation of what my mom used to make, and it's actually not at the menu at Flower, but it's at the menu at the Chinese restaurant I have with my husband Meyerson Chang.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we have the hot and sour soup at Meyerson Chang. We offer the hot and sour soup every now and then we do daily soups at the bakeries, and so sometimes that will show up. And it's such a great, easy recipe. you know, my mom was a working mom, and so all of the recipes that she did for us really were streamlined so that they didn't take a whole lot of time. Mm. And then, so this recipe, you know, I've taken the recipe that she did and made it a little bit more accessible to American cooks who might not have access to Asian markets. Mm. And it's been one of those recipes, and I think because, in part because of the great photography, a lot of readers have been making this straight out of the book. So I've gotten tons of great feedback, and people are loving it, which is really nice to hear.
It looks like it doesn't have anything that you really couldn't find at any traditional supermarket. So, you know, great job making a little variation of that. It looks delicious, right, too. I really want to eat it. We're just going to have a quick little musical interlude, and we'll chat more right after the break.
Well, Miss Louise, can't you understand? Well, Miss Louise, can't be a man.
You're listening to Miss Louise by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Get back, your broken heart. Well, Miss Louise, why can't you see? Well, Miss Louise, this could never be.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than two-thirds of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way. Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at wholefoodsmarket.com/sharethebuzz.
All right, we're back chatting with Joanne Chang, the chef owner of Flower Restaurants and Myers and Chang Restaurant, and also the author of Flower 2, her second cookbook. It is out now from Chronicle Books, and it's delicious. So we have Joanne on the line. Are you cooking currently at your, are you like in between some crazy hot cheek pans right now at Flower?
No, I'm actually in between locations, and so okay. I found a little quiet place to tuck away. That's been one of the big challenges with opening multiple locations is trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B, and so I feel like it's a logistical challenge every day to get around.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm so sorry that you can't actually be here so we could treat you to some pizza here at Roberta's, but hopefully another time.
Next time. Definitely next time.
Another time, whenever you're in town. I mean, I love how you kind of give a day in the life of your restaurant in this book, and it's a busy life. Oh my gosh, running four restaurants, you know, from 4 a.m. to forever, basically.
till about 11 or 12.
Okay.
There's always somebody at the bakery. Yeah,
and that's, you know, that's a demanding job. What are the best rewards about doing this crazy endeavor, in your opinion?
You know, for me, the biggest and best reward is absolutely the amount of pleasure and joy that we're bringing to so many people through what we do. When we just had the one location, it was very easy to see. You know, we had this one little location in the South End serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner to the group of people who kind of lived and worked around that location. And I never thought that we would open a second location or a third or a fourth. But we found ourselves, you know, just so busy. And I had so many wonderful staff members who also wanted to stay within the bakery, but there wasn't really much room for them to grow because we just had one location. So opening the second location allowed people more challenges. And then it allowed for kind of spreading what we call Flower love to more people within Boston. I mean, it sounds a little goofy, but it is crazy how much joy people get out of food. And I know it firsthand, and it's really gratifying just to see that on an everyday basis. You know, walking into the bakery, regardless of which location, and just watching people light up when they walk in for the first time or for the 100th time, and, you know, agonizing over which pastry to pick or which sandwich to order. And then just kind of feeling the sense that you get when you walk into a place where everybody's just enjoying food. You know, it's a bakery cafe, so it's nothing too fancy, but sometimes I feel like you get so much more enjoyment out of a place that's a little bit simpler. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I love fancy meals. I love the, you know, going out all out on for dinner, but just the, just watching people just enjoy a great, great croissant or an amazing bowl of soup. I think that's kind of what drives all of us who work at the bakery, because it is so high volume. It's kind of hard to slow down a little bit and appreciate what we do.
And you get to see all aspects of the whole business too, working in a smaller cafe like setting and get, you know, hands on. So, excuse me. So what is your favorite dish right now that you would be making, I don't know, for lunch in this kind of early fall, maybe late summer weather?
Let's see. You know, for me, I naturally have a sweet tooth. So this book features a lot of our savories, but I did sneak in some sweets. And right now it's, you know, apple season. We're just starting to get into apple picking here in Boston. Ooh. And one of my favorite recipes in this book is the Dutch apple pancake. It's a it's a baked apple pancake that's made with just a handful of ingredients. I mean, seriously, everybody would have all of this at home. It's like eggs and milk and flour and apples and cinnamon and butter. But you whisk it all together and pour it over sautéed apples into a cast iron skillet, and you put it into a really hot oven. And it just poofs up very dramatically in the oven. And by the time you serve it, it kind of settles down a little bit. But all of the butter and the sugar get all nice and caramelized. And the apples are, they're so good. So
it's kind of is it kind of like an apple upside down cake, but you don't really turn it upside down because it's a pancake?
Yeah, little bit. Yeah, the batter's a lot thinner. And so like a cake batter is thicker, and so it's just going to bake as a cake. But like this batter is a lot liquidier, and so because there's so much liquid, it's got a lot of milk in it. Because there's so much liquid, the liquid causes the whole batter to steam up, and that's what allows the pancake to poof up.
That's so fun. That's like a real classic, like American kind of like Puritan or Dutch something recipe.
Yeah,
right. That's so fun.
I think it is Dutch. I think it's an old Dutch recipe.
Cool. And I noticed you have another cake, a scallion pancake. Tell me a little bit about this twist that you have. How did you come up with the focaccia flour for a scallion pancake?
This is a super fun recipe. So, you know, scallion pancakes, everybody orders them when you go to a Chinese restaurant. They tend to be a little bit chewy. They're usually made with a dough that's leavened with a little bit of baking powder. But we make a focaccia dough at the bakery that we've made since we've opened, that we use to make our pizzas and we use to make our sandwich bread. And I thought to myself, you know, what happens if you fry the dough? Because if you've ever been to like a state fair, they have fried dough that they sprinkle with powdered sugar, and it's always light and crispy and fluffy.
Yeah.
So I took some of our focaccia dough and I fried it, and it was incredible. And that kind of just led to another thought. Well, what if I actually took the ingredients of a scallion pancake and mixed it into this dough and then fried it? And that is now what we serve at Myers & Chang. It is a non-traditional scallion pancake made with a focaccia dough that we mix in sesame oil, salt, and scallions. And then we roll it out and then fry it in a thin layer of oil, and it just poofs up. And it becomes a little bit like fried dough, but a savory version that's got a lot of great flavor with all the scallions and the sesame oil.
Wow, this non-traditional twist sounds just absolutely brilliant. I mean, scallion pancakes can be really hit or miss, don't you think?
Yeah. I think you should go next door to Roberta's and ask them to try it, because they have that incredible pizza dough.
Yeah, and
show them the picture.
Yeah, I love how you have the pictures too, because you really do have to roll it into this tube or, you know, cinnamon twist thing, and then smash it out.
Yeah.
And then
we tried just mixing. Yeah, we tried just mixing in all the ingredients, and it didn't quite come out the same. So we stuck with the traditional method of rolling it out into like a jelly roll.
Yeah.
It adds a layer of flakiness that's really nice.
And I like how you mentioned that there are so many different variations of scallion pancakes already. Like, there's just so many variations. What is the kind, I don't know, have you been to Taiwan recently in the last, I don't know, 10 years?
No, it's been like 20 years.
Okay, well, there's many different kinds, and there's this one kind where they kind of like shred it up too while they're frying it on a pan. It's kind of crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Into like flaky bits. But I think that sometimes they're more flaky, sometimes they're more chewy. I feel like there's just a different style for a different preference. And this one is just brilliant, the one that you have. So
thank you
for adding to the scope. So you mentioned you didn't grow up in a restaurant household, like business.
Oh gosh, no.
You mentioned your mother was in economics as well. What did they think when you first began this venture with your degree from Harvard?
A little bit nervous. I'll admit, you know, I had a really nice stable job as a management consultant right out of college, and very, very kind of what they expected and what they were hoping for. And then 2 years in, I just said, you know what, I'm leaving this job and I'm going to go work in a restaurant. And so they were nervous and concerned. They were, you know, and at the time I was 24 years old and I thought, I know what I'm doing. You know, this is going to be great. I love cooking. This is going to be awesome. Of course, now I employ a lot of 24-year-olds, and I look at them, I'm like, you have no idea what you're doing. You know, you don't know anything about life right now. So I feel like I was really lucky in that my parents just, they had a little faith, and they said, okay, you know, you need to make sure that you can live in this new career that you're going into, but we will support you as much as we can. And, I mean, luckily, I fell in love with it, and then I got really fortunate in that I was able to work with really great chefs. And as you move through different restaurants, as you work under different chefs and learn more and more, you know, you yourself get better and better. And so I think they saw how happy I was and how fulfilled I was doing cooking and then baking. And then I got really great mentors, and they started to meet the chefs that I was working for, and now they love it. You know, now they come all the time and they want to eat at the bakeries all the time. But in the beginning, you know, they were definitely a little bit nervous. So I owe a lot to them for being supportive throughout.
Cool. And you definitely work your way through some seriously, you know, varsity restaurants, with some great mentors, Le Bernardin and a few others. But I didn't catch, did you go to culinary school?
No, I didn't. When I
self-taught
left consulting, I just got a job. And at that point, I thought, should I take time off to go to culinary? And I think that might have been the straw that broke the camel's back if I'd asked my parents, you know, for money to go to culinary school. So I kept working. And at a certain point, once you're working in a restaurant, you start to learn more than you could learn in a culinary school. You know, and after a certain point, it doesn't make sense to go back to culinary school. So I ended up kind of bypassing that step, really trying to get my training by making sure that I was working for chefs who would take the time to teach me. And I think that's key. You know, a lot of people now ask, should I go to culinary school? Should I not? And I really think it depends on who you're able to hook up with if you end up skipping it. Like, sometimes if you're with a chef who's not necessarily going to show you what you need to know, then it makes sense to take the time and go to culinary school. But I was fortunate in that I worked with really great chefs.
Cool. So that would be your advice to folks looking. It sounds like, I'm sure you get a lot of people who ask you, how do I do this? How do I get into the restaurant industry? Would that be your advice to try to, you know, work under really amazing mentors instead of culinary school?
Yeah, my advice would definitely be to take that as a first step. And it doesn't even mean that you have to spend, you know, 3 or 4 years of your life trying to find good chefs to mentor under. But, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, I really want to do this, what do? I always recommend that they find, you know, one place that they really like, and that they walk into this restaurant or this bakery and they think, I love everything about this place. And to try to get a job in that place and spend at least 6 months, if not a year, to just see what it's really like. And I would recommend that almost even before considering culinary school, because once you go to culinary school, you're kind of taking a big plunge. You're taking a big monetary plunge and a big time plunge. And you might end up going through and getting your degree and then realizing that working in a professional kitchen isn't even what you like because you haven't done it yet. So
this is also a good way to get a taste of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Literally. Hopefully it's a delicious one. All right. Well, thank you so much. This is such an inspiring story of success, and all the best to you.
Thank you.
And the Flower restaurants. And I look forward to seeing Flower 3 and 4, the cookbook on the show. All right. Well, thanks everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.